This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
By the book on BFM 89.9.
Hello, you are listening to Buy the Book. I'm Lee Chui Lin. With me, as always, my fellow comic book reader.
Yes.
Sharmila Ganesan. Yes. For the purposes of this show in particular, very important. And of course, we're joined by our repeat book clubber, Hanif Baharudin.
Hi, guys. Hello. Thanks for having me again.
So, okay, like if Hanif sounds a bit tentative, that's because we're all feeling a little excited because our chosen books, actually, fair to say, our chosen books for this month's book club is actually The Sandman. And it's Sandman collected in volumes 1 to 3.
Yes. So because there are 10 volumes of collected comics, it's kind of impossible to do all 10 in one show. So we've decided that Hanif is going to come along with us on this journey of a sort of serialized book club.
Yes, it is. And like today we're starting with Preludes and Nocturnes, The Dollhouse and Dream Country.
That's right. So those are for those of you who don't know, from the comic book series Sandman by Neil Gaiman, those are the first three collected volumes.
My name is Neil Gaiman. I'm a writer of things. Sandman number one was published. It was in 1988, and somewhere in about November. And at the very beginning of Sandman number one, the Dream King himself, Morpheus, the Sandman, is captured by a black magic organization in a basement in an English manor house and is kept there for 70 years. And he escapes, he takes his revenge on his captors, and the story begins. So for me, Sandman was telling the kind of story that I wanted to tell.
So I think that's so we're trying to tread carefully here because it is there are loads of them, and we don't want to leap ahead. We don't want to spoil anything. Both Sharmila and I have read all of them.
We've read all of them. Hanif is in the process of completing the series, so it's very exciting for us.
two more collections to go.
But okay, so for those who are unfamiliar, I suppose this is considered in many ways Neil Gaiman's magnum opus. It is often held up as, this is why you can take comic books seriously, because it's considered a graphic novel.
Like the gold standard of comics and graphic novels, up there with the likes of Watchmen and V for Vendetta. But the difference being this is a series. It actually took the serialized sort of format, but did really exciting, complex, layered things with it and drawing on mythology and history and contemporary sort of pop culture and stories and dreams and all sorts of things, really. I mean, I don't even know where to start.
So I suppose we should just begin at the beginning because otherwise we are going to get lost. There is a lot to talk about. So the book is about the titular, in some ways about the titular Sandman, or Morpheus, or Dream of the Endless. He is the third. And they're all sort of humanized ideas of
the humanized versions of these big concepts, right? Mm-hmm. So you have dream, you have death, you have destiny, desire. Who else? Despair, delirium.
Who was once delight?
Who was once delight? Destruction.
There are seven of them.
There we go.
So it talks about this family, but really it focuses on Dream, right? Yes. Who is, as the name indicates, his domain is Dream. He is the master of them. He is, in many ways, Dream incarnate. So it's a little bit difficult to explain what they are. But where we meet him, he begins trapped by somebody who was attempting to entrap death and instead trapped Dream. And so many decades passed in a world where Dream was not present. And that's where we meet the opening of the books.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's where we were introduced to a lot of different characters and how I think the absence of Dream has sort of, like, I think, disrupted the world, right? And then we were introduced to some of the characters and how these characters, I think some of the arcs of these characters, I think they will wrap up immediately, but some of them will be continued in later books as well. Yeah, I find that premise quite interesting because I think the character Roderick Burgess, yeah, so he wanted to capture death, essentially to because he wants to live forever, right? I think, but he ended up catching Dream instead, right? And then Dream was stuck in there for 70 years before he was eventually released. Yeah, and I think that in itself, when I first read it, it was like, oh, okay, so it was an interesting premise. And when Dream was captured, he was they took away his pouch containing sand inside and like a ruby and also his helmet, right? And then eventually he managed to escape, and then we follow him on this journey of him trying to just find all these three items, and then I think eventually go back to his duties, I guess, right? because he has left this his realm for like 70 years,
and so sort of reclaim the dream realm, dreaming.
And actually, that in and of itself is a good explanation, I think, of the juxtaposition of Sandman. Because on the one hand, you've got the story, you've got the action where he's off on... It's very much a quest story, right? Mm. He's going to reclaim things. He may have to do battle along the way. So if you want to read it purely in terms of narrative, it works. But it also introduces us to the idea that dream is an idea, a responsibility, a man, and a place. It's like it's all those different things at once. And I think that's an early important thing to understand about reading Sandman, that that this notion of responsibility and the ties that bind us to what we are and what we have to do, those are the things that are going to help explain the story as it moves along, because they are all that. I mean, death is both death and a really cute person, and also the concept, and also the Grim Reaper, but not.
And an event that happens to people.
Exactly. Yeah. So I think just understanding that on a very base level will help you make your way through these rather complex books.
Yeah.
And I think the first book also, and your explanation was spot on, Hanif, it really sets up what the rest of the books are like in that, yes, it's a story about Morpheus, about Dream, but often there are pages that go by without him there. And there are many characters. You know, you're first not even introduced to him. You're introduced to a bunch of other characters and you're kind of wondering, what's going on? Why is this random guy looking for this random thing? And along the way, as Morpheus is on his quest, you meet a host of fascinating characters who, in their own right, and sometimes are even more fascinating than Morpheus is. But then he's always sort of on the periphery or on the edges, and that sets up the experience of reading the rest of the series, because that is what the rest of the series is about. There are hundreds of stories and hundreds of characters that get introduced, sometimes just for a couple of panels, sometimes for whole stories, and they are as important as he is.
Yep. Well, that brings us actually to The Dollhouse, because that, again, is a very... how do we even begin to describe what's going on in The Dollhouse? So I suppose we find ourselves with a Dream who is taking stock, actually.
Yes.
Who's taking stock. Yep. He's back in his realm. He's trying to like ensure that everybody is where they're supposed to be. And he finds that some aren't. And it is a mixture of things. Some of the dream creatures that have gone missing are nightmares.
Literally, yes.
Just truly awful creations and nightmares. And then some others are gentler, are perhaps more benign, are happier. And yet they have forsaken their duty in the land that we think of as dream. And then it's an exploration, I suppose, of what it means for a living nightmare to walk the earth in some ways. So it's several stories, but one of the stories, which... don't read it at night, is actually, I think, about what it means when an idea that is a nightmare walks the earth for 70 years and what that can do to people.
Mm. Are we talking about Corinthian here?
Yeah, we are talking about the Corinthian.
The Corinthian, I swear, the first time I read about him was one of the most terrifying characters, particularly because you don't ever really see what he looks like, right? Except for small bits of it. And he gives me nightmares. You're absolutely right. Don't read him at night.
the interesting thing about, I think, reading Sandman is that it's not a hero story as much as we think that, before I read Sandman, I thought that Sandman is a story about Morpheus, and it's not. And the best thing about, like you said, Shamila, the best thing about reading Simon is that at one point you didn't even care about Morpheus because he's not, because he won't be appear in the story until, I think, towards the third act or much, much later. And sometimes you don't even want to know about him. But what I like about his character is that while he is the so-called hero, he is not necessarily likable as a character. Right? I mean, I like him, but he displays a lot of different kind of characteristics that makes you like question him as well.
And Dollhouse actually starts with one of those stories. It's a story that is set very, very long ago. It's a sort of legend of a particular group of people. And it starts with him being selfish and cruel and even mean to someone that he loves. And then I think because in the first story, you don't really know of him as a person, and then you're thrown into that in the second volume, it's quite jarring because you're like, who is this character that I thought was the hero, but then is frankly behaving like a jerk?
And so that's the thing I was going to say, right? Because it's called Sandman, you think that's what sets you up on this belief that it's a hero. It's going to be about a hero. And then you're also introduced to somebody who at the start needs to reclaim things. Mm-hmm. And once again, you're like, yeah, returning hero, avenging hero. And you're right. Like the fact that he is arrogant, the fact that he is selfish, the fact that he is deeply sensitive, like some might say overly sensitive, mm-hmm. easily hurt. And when he's hurt, he's like prone to big gestures.
mildly put.
Yeah, very mildly put. He's prone to doing some stuff.
Quite dramatic, basically.
Yeah. He's a drama king, but he refuses to accept that that's what he is. And so,
I mean, look at him. He's got the big hair. He's got the leather pants and the cape and whatever. I mean, we knew it was coming, right?
But, so it introduces you to a character who, and again, I think that this is a theme, so I hope it's not a spoiler for anybody, but it is a theme that runs throughout the rest of the books. It introduces you to somebody who needs to change, in many ways has a lot of flaws and has been changing, but you recognize that the change is happening very, very slowly, perhaps too slowly. And that is one of the, I think, again, things to keep in mind when you're reading about him, because in Dream Country, where he actually goes, which is the third volume, where he actually helps out an old lover from a just deeply disturbing situation that she finds herself in. And she says, you know, you would have left me in the past to rot. And he was like, well, I've changed now.
Yeah.
But at the same time, you are going to see him in other instances just not care, you know? And so you recognize that this is a guy for whom, for all the greatness that he is, Morpheus, Dream, the Shaper of Forms or whatever, he is somebody who is just changing far too slowly.
Yeah. And I'm glad that we can, you know, we were brought along to that, in that journey as well, because you're right with that. I noticed that a lot. The fact that he's taking his time to sort of like understand what's happening around him. And I wonder whether that's because he's been trapped in that thing for 70 years or whether that's his genuine character.
So we're going to get into the characters, I think, in a bit more detail. We are talking our way around Neil Gaiman's Sandman. We're attempting it, or at least we're attempting the first three collected volumes of it. We are going to do this in dribs and drabs because they're just such big books. So today we're talking about Preludes and Nocturnes. We're talking about The Doll's House and Dream Country. If you have any thoughts about Neil Gaiman's Sandman, send them through. WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899. Tweet us at BFM Radio and write to us at buythebook@bfm.my.
Brainy, fancy material. BFM 89.9.
Hello, you are listening to Buy the Book with Lynn, Sharmila, and our book lover, Hanif. And today we are talking about Neil Gaiman's masterpiece, I think, let's just call it that, Sandman, specifically the first three collected volumes, which again, Preludes and Nocturnes, The Doll's House and Dream Country. So I think we've laid out kind of who Morpheus is, some members of his family. And I think that Preludes and Nocturnes, just to take it back to the first book, is actually a really superb introduction to the rest of the series, because I believe that if you read that and you're not into it, it's very likely that you're not going to be into the rest.
Yeah, no, I've often found this in the past whenever I've introduced the series to people. If they don't like the first book or the first collection, it's unlikely that they're going to be, because it really is a sort of a a template almost, and I don't mean that in a bad way because it's not repetitive, but it sets up a lot of what the rest of the series is going to be about, from the sort of hurtling you into situations where you need to figure out where you are. Gaiman doesn't patronize his readers. You know, he throws in references to mythology and religion without explaining where you are or who these people might be.
Also obscure literary quotes.
Yes.
Like the kinds of which you're like, did you just... And then it's the kind of thing that sends you off to an encyclopedia.
Yes.
Yeah, more often than not.
Or these days, you know, you're just like with your phone so that you're Googling references while you're reading it. I think that the first volume is really off the first three, because we're talking about those three now, is my favorite. And it remains actually my favorite even among the 10. I wouldn't say absolute favorite, but it has such a special place for me because it's what kept me wanting to know more about this amazing world that Gaiman created.
What I find interesting about the first volume is that I think just a little bit of background about how Gaiman approached it. I think I read in an interview that apparently he was trying to find his footing during the first volume, and hence he was trying to, because it's at that time written under DC before they became Vertigo. So he was trying to introduce this concept of Morpheus, Sandman, I mean, this endless within the DC universe. But at the same time, he doesn't want to, I think, mine so much from it. But at the same time, because he wants to sort of acknowledge the existence of this narrative within the universe, he mines all these characters or all these references to the DC universe. And because I read comics as well, I read DC comics as well, I kind of like the fact that he had a mention of like Arkham Asylum there.
Yes.
You can see Batman at one point. Martian Manhunter was there as well. So it's sort of like, as a comic book reader that is more familiar with the DC universe rather than the Sandman world at that time, it sort of like welcomed me slowly into the realm. But the references were made only within the first volume, and I kind of like the fact that after that he decided to just not use those references so much. So it was just like a welcome approach. Like, okay, guys, we're technically maybe in the DC universe ish because there are references to Arkham Asylum. You can see there are references made about Joker, about, you know, Batman, Martian Manhunter, and all those characters. But eventually, after you finish the first volume, you know that I think Gaiman got a bit more comfortable and said that, you know what, I'm just going to create my own universe. And that is, as much as it's welcoming, I like the fact that eventually he finds his footing and decided to like, okay, I'm just gonna, you know, go on this tangent, you know, I'm just gonna make references to literature, make references to mythology and things like that, without actually relying so much on the DC universe.
But isn't that exactly it, right? Like, because these are often thought of as the books that are that intersection between the literary and the comic, right? So for a long time, I think even the term graphic novel is one of those where people are like, really? I mean, just call a comic book a comic book. But these books, I think, it's very novelistic. You know, the way that's a character that you meet in book two suddenly really deeply matters perhaps in book eight or book nine, you know. So there is that recurring idea, recurring characters, recurring themes, growing characters. But also, like you said, Hanif, there's this real acknowledgement of, yeah, but we're in comic books, you know, we're in comic books and people wear mantles here, you know. And for example, in The Doll's House, there is actually a play on other Sandmans that have lived within the DC universe and who are not particular our brooding anti-hero, you know, with his archaic English, and are instead more zip, bang, boom, wow, more traditional comic book. And I think you can tell that this is written from somebody who has a serious love of the form, and that really comes through all the way.
I grew up reading comics. I was a kid. Probably the high point for me of reading comics would have been 75. The idea back then that a comic that would have started being published in the late 1940s and finished in the mid-50s would still be relevant and exciting would have been almost unthinkable. But things have changed now. And I guess Sandman was one of the things that actually changed them. We created new readers. We didn't have those readers before. Demographics were changing. At the time, we started getting adults reading comics. I remember reading an article in a magazine in the UK back then that said there can be no comics for adults because adults don't read comics. And of course, they were wrong. Adults do read comics. We may call them graphic novels sometimes just to, you know, confuse our trail. But we know what we're reading. And the idea was just, when I was starting out as a writer, I decided that comics were a medium. They were a medium like any other medium.
Speaking of the form, I think you cannot undermine how important the form is to the story he's telling, because I don't think this is a story that could have been told just novelistically. The art matters so much. The way the story unfolds matters so much. When you're in the dreaming, there are times when the panels don't seem linear. There are times when you are forced to turn what you're reading sideways to understand, because suddenly the story flow changes, because suddenly you're in a different, the world has tilted literally, and so you have to read it this way. And I think that's what's so brilliant about it, right? Because Gaiman did go on to write amazing books, but the marriage of the artwork and being able to see, for instance, when Dream is visualized by different people, or even in Dream Country, by cats and what he would look like, that's not something you can achieve without the artwork.
I was going to say that I think it's really interesting. I think it's really important to note that Dream is always depicted with a certain speech bubble.
Yes.
So everybody actually has their own form. Yeah. Within the family, within
Desire, Destiny, they all have their own speech bubbles. Yeah.
They have their own specific.
Well, I suppose
ways.
They have their own lettering and
style.
And style.
And
yeah.
Even coloring within the lettering in some cases. And that actually helps me hear Dream's voice in a way that I think a written book would not have been able to. I mean, how are you going to tell me every time in a novel that Dream shows up, oh, he's speaks in a strange voice that sounds like you've thrown a solitary pebble into a very deep well, which is how I imagine Dream's voice to sound. And I get that every single time he speaks because I see his speech bubbles, and that's like a graphic representation of his voice. And like you said, the form is so important.
Mm-hmm. But do you guys like the art form? Do you guys like the fact that sometimes they change artists? Or do you prefer like a consistent artist throughout? Because this is going to sound a bit bad, but there were parts where I think the art wasn't that great. But I like the fact that he changes artists from time to time because it gives the story a little bit of like a different dynamic, like suitable to the realm or to the world that he has created, right?
So it's never bothered me that it's different. Yes, the consistency of quality changes, but I think it's been clever enough that it matches the story that it's trying to tell. And it's never felt so jarring that I'm like, oh, why does he suddenly look like this? And it's weird, right? Like, there are times when I find Dream very attractive, and that has to be the way he's drawn. And then there are times when I look at him and I'm just like, why did I ever find him attractive? I don't understand. And I cannot tell whether it's the way he's drawn or whether it's the character itself or some weird combination of the two.
The character, let's face it, like we've said, I mean, he's very cool.
Yeah.
Not a great guy. not a great guy, but a great anti-hero. I mean, as you follow his journey, I think it's hard not to get invested in him. I completely get what you mean. Sometimes you're like, ooh, hello, cheekbones. Yeah. And then other times it's just like, dear God, all right, you tall creep. Yeah. Like, you need to do something else. I think that the art is, I agree, very changeable. Some of it I like better than others, for sure. But I think I like the fact that we have characters in here, and here again, I'm speaking of the Endless specifically, where they are supposed to look different to different people because we encounter them according to our beliefs, our culture, what we expect. I mean, all those things are factored into who we see when death comes for us. Like, that's quite clear in the books. And so I like the fact, therefore, that there are several different interpretations of those characters. And since, I mean, Shyamala, you brought up the dreaming, which we haven't mentioned, but that's the realm, right? And so I like the fact that in a way, when we enter the books, we enter the dreaming. That's the setup, in a sense. You know, we're entering a space where it's like, this is where the Sandman rules. So just expect that. I like the changeability for that reason. I like the fact that I don't know what to expect. So we've talked about roughly the three books. Yeah. Did you guys like the little glimpse behind the curtains that happens at the end of Dream Country? So in my volume, at least, I don't know if it's in everybody's, I think it probably is, there is actually a script for one of
the... Oh, where he reveals how he scripts his panels. Do you have that in yours?
I have it, but I think I haven't read it yet. I haven't read that yet.
Oh, that's interesting. I wonder whether, because I think it might help answer some of the questions you have about the art.
So that's what I like about these collected volumes. And I've only ever read them in this form. I've never read them as individual comics. They have all of these notes and introductions from not just Gaiman, but the artists and the color, you know, the people who are doing the coloring and so on. And then they have these little bits of like the script that he includes sometimes that often adds a lot to the process of reading the books, reading the comics, because they give you an insight of how difficult it is to make this come together so seamlessly.
And it was really... So I get why you might not have read it, because to be honest, when I opened... I mean, I've read it before, but when I opened it on my reread, I was like, I've just gotten used to all the pictures. Now it's a lot of words. But it actually shows you how Neil Gaiman writes the scripts. And I found paging back and forth between his script and then the comics to see how it was translated, because he actually he writes it as a letter to the artist, which is cool. So he's like, hi, Kelly. Okay, so blah, blah, blah. This is what I'm thinking, blah, blah, blah. But then each page, he also indicates the grid. He indicates the emotions. He has very clear visuals of how he thinks the characters look. And so it was really cool to see all that translated then to the story of Calliope.
Which is what we didn't get to talking about Dream Country entirely too much, but I think that helps also in a volume like Dream Country, of which there are more later,
yeah,
which are sort of vignettes of little stories where Dream is kind of on the periphery. And those are actually some of my favorites.
Where I love those.
Where you just get little bursts of stories where you understand why dreams are important and why stories are important. And I think it's great to get this kind of insight from Neil Gaiman about those stories as well.
Yeah. I do feel sad now that we're running out of time. I did love Dream Country. Okay. Tell us what you think of Neil Gaiman's Sandman. Are you planning to pick it up? Is this your 10th time making your way through it? Whichever the case, WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899. You can tweet us at BFM Radio and write to us at buythebook@bfm.my. And that brings us to footnotes. So we have spent a lot of time this episode talking about graphic novels, but specifically ones that, well, specifically Neil Gaiman's Sandman. So we thought we would just touch very briefly on other graphic novels that we enjoy, so you get an idea of our tastes and preferences. Sharmila, you want to start us off?
So I thought I would start off by talking about my very first ever, technically, what a graphic novel was, which is this Indian series of comics that are done on Indian mythologies, and they're called the Amar Chitra Katha series. And you know, we used to get them, I can't even remember where we used to buy them, in places like Brickfields, or I'd have relatives coming over from India. And so really that was my introduction to reading comics, reading stories that were not superhero stories or Archie comics in this visual form. And the combination of the artwork, which were really beautiful, with these big mythological stories. So they'd do Ramayana, they'd do Mahabharata, they'd even do like folk tales of India, all in this comic format.
And what was that called again?
It's called great. The series is called the Amar Chitra Katha, and within them they just did many, many, many stories. So I just wanted to give a little shout out, because I think that sort of introduced me to the idea of consuming big stories in this way.
Mm, okay. For me, I think we want to talk about my first exposure to a graphic novel that changes my perception on how a comic can be written in a serious way was definitely The Dark Knight Returns. Mm. Yeah, that one was a good one, and it changes my perception of the character, not only the character, but also the medium itself. But if you want to talk about favorite comics, I think off the top of my head, I have to recommend another Neil Gaiman's work, if you guys don't mind that. It's Marvel 1602. And I think if you're a Marvel fan, and if you want to still get a bit of like Neil Gaiman's style, or if you're more familiar with like Neil Gaiman's writing, but you want to see it in a less transcendental way, it's not the Sandman definitely, but it's an interesting take it's an interesting interpretation of the Marvel universe that was told from the perspective of all the characters that you are familiar with, but it was told in a setting in the Elizabethan setting in 1602. So Marvel, I think Neil Gaiman being Neil Gaiman, I think he decided that I think this was a perfect setting for him to sort of like tell the typical Marvel story, but not in a typical setting. So I think it's in terms of like a novel that I can recommend for now, that's a good one to start with.
So what happened to me was that Sandman actually started me down this path more than anything else. Outside of my Archies and Doraemons, which I love, the first sort of adult dip, I think, also outside of the random superhero ones that were thrown my way from time to time, was Sandman. And that set me down a particular path of vertigo. I started really looking up what they did. And the next one that truly captured my imagination, that I would buy one and then regret that I hadn't just bought three because I needed to know what happened, is Preacher, which I know you can now see as a TV show, and I can't speak to its quality because I refuse to watch it. Not for anything, just because I really love the comic books and I kind of just want them to be on their own, to sit on their own. And it was created by Garth Ennis, who wrote it, and Steve Dillon, who did the art. And it really tells the story of Jesse Custer, who is a small-town preacher who, when God abandons heaven, suddenly attains the voice of God and is able to use it from time to time when he so wishes to tell people exactly what to do, and they have no choice but to do it. And then he decides that, you know what, like, why did you curse me with this? I'm going to hunt you down. And so it's a story of a renegade preacher on the hunt for God, and who has a vampire best friend who has, it's so good. It's clearly like blasphemous in the extreme, but it's just good old-fashioned storytelling. It's funny, it's sweet. It has the consistency of art, I think, Hanif, that you would be looking for, because it's the same artist. And that's actually a really cool visual style, because I love Elvis and Jesse Custer looks like Elvis. So that helped me. And the fact that he wasn't going to look different was a great kind of driver to keep going. But I found it a propulsive experience. I finished all the books as quickly as I could. I just loved it.
It's quite dark, though.
It is very dark. I think if the setup doesn't indicate that there is a lot of death and heartbreak coming your way, then I should probably say that there is a lot of death and heartbreak. But it's a beautiful, funny, action-packed, I loved it, Preacher. Tell us whether you like any of these selections, whether you enjoy graphic novels at all. WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899. You can tweet us at BFM Radio. And of course, write to us. We love reading letters. Write to us at buythebook@bfm.my.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.